Today I want to look at the wider issue in this series on the Christian's world. We've looked at the family and the church and the society in which he lives, but now let us consider the wider context. That is, the whole world in which we live, looking on the international scene or on the major considerations of life in this world in which we live. We're all aware that the world is not as God intended it to be. And all of this, of course, has come through man's sin. You can look on every hand and you'll see the consequences of sin. Instead of enjoying the life God intended for him, a man is troubled in his mind by conflict and tension. He is troubled in his body by sickness and disease. He has similar conflict and tension in his relationships with his fellow man, whether personal relationships or international relationships, nothing but conflict and difficulty. He's in conflict also with his natural environment, because even the world of nature has suffered through man's sin. We saw that in the reading we had from Romans chapter 8, that the creation suffers, and it's not what it ought to be because of man's sin. We'll come back to that later on. And above all, of course, man is in conflict with God. Whichever way you look, within himself, in his personal relationships with others, in the wider world, in his relationship with God, everything is affected because of sin. Now, Jesus Christ came to bring healing. He healed people, not only in their bodies and in their minds, but also in their relationships with one another, and above all, in their relationship with God. Also, we find that he worked to bring healing in the natural environment. Look at those stories of the record of Jesus, and you'll find that there's this healing of body, healing of mind, healing of relationships, and even there are miracles of healing in the natural world. But none of that healing work of Jesus was universal. It was done within a limited context of the place and time where he lived. Jesus did not come to change everything in the world in the short space of the time he was here. What he did was to come and show that he was the Son of God. He came to save. He came to make complete salvation possible through his death and resurrection. He gave men the opportunity to accept that salvation now, and he promised that they will enjoy that salvation in its fullness when he returns at the end of the age. And when he returns at the end of the age, then all the rebellious will be taken away in judgment, all the effects of sin in the world will be removed, disease, suffering, sickness, war, and death will be banished, and then man will enjoy perfect peace within himself, with his fellow man, and with God. Likewise, the world of nature will have the perfect splendor originally intended for it. Now that is the ultimate goal. Christ did the foundation work. Christ made it all possible through what he did when he came here in his first coming. He will bring it to its fulfillment at his second coming. In the meantime, mankind lives on this earth, and Christians should be working towards those goals that Jesus Christ has. The expectation of sharing with Christ in a new life which is free from sin ought to encourage the Christian here and now to work towards freedom from sin in his own life. And that concerns all the damaging effects of sin. Not just those in his own life, but also those in the lives of other people and in the world at large. So that's the general context of what we're going to speak about. Concerning the basic responsibility which the Christian has to the wider world, the first task which man has is to spread the message of God's salvation to others. This work starts in a person's own family and in his own neighborhood, but it must not end there. Jesus told his disciples, we read that section at the end of Matthew chapter 28, Jesus said to the disciples, "Take this message to all nations. Go into all the world and make disciples. Go to the ends of the earth," we find in another one of those references. It was an international, worldwide mission that he entrusted to his followers. There's only one God, and there's only one person who can bring man back to God, and that's Jesus Christ. He didn't have one God who made Australia, and a different God made America, and a different God made the moon. There's one God made the whole lot. There's only one creator. Jesus Christ was that God become man. And it's through Jesus Christ that the salvation becomes possible and is spread out to others. salvation is found in Christ alone. Acts chapter 4 verse 12, there is salvation in no one else. In all the world, it says, there is no one else whom God has given who can save us. And so the Savior for all mankind, for all nations, to the end of the earth, that Savior is Jesus Christ. And Christians take the message of Christ into new regions. That's what they're to do. That's the prime responsibility we have, to spread this message of God worldwide. And then as you follow those instructions which Jesus gave his followers there in Matthew 28 that we read, they take the message into all nations, they make disciples of these people, they baptize those who believe, they teach them how to be followers of Jesus, and they build them together into local churches. Then as you read through the book of Acts, which continues the story on after the end of Matthew 28 there, these churches which the early followers of Jesus established then became centers from which the new Christian community spread out into the regions round about. The Christian message is for all people. It's not tied to any one era or culture or language or race. Christ brings new hope for all mankind. In fact, he's mankind's only hope. And so you find then that throughout the world, Christians have been busy spreading the message of Christ. Some people do this full time. They go into other countries, take up residence there, and they can work towards spreading this message of Jesus Christ so that others might hear. And then there are other people who go into countries where maybe they're not allowed to work full-time in church work or in missionary work or in Christian preaching, but they are able to gain access through occupations that they have. They can get into places in secular employment, and in this way, of course, they can get into places where full-time preachers can't go. And in this way, again, they are able to make the message known. Many ways of reaching into all the world, and we must make these efforts to reach people everywhere, whether remote villages or the crowded cities, right through the world. We must make this effort to take the message of Christ and make it known to others. Doesn't matter whether people are tribal folks, whether they're students, whether they're backward in civilization and progress, or whether they are living in modern cities, whether they're factory workers or whether they're politicians, whether they're big time or small time, it makes no difference. They all need Christ, regardless of their status, race or rank. And as Christians, it's our basic responsibility to take the message to them so that they might hear. That was the basic concern of Jesus, to release men from the bondage of sin, to give them new life in God. But his concern didn't end there. He was also concerned for their physical needs, and so you find that he fed the hungry. He healed the sick. He gave sight to the blind. He relieved the oppressed. And as the followers of Jesus do the same, they not only carry on Christ's work, but they also show people the type of world that God wants. Now you'll find that wherever Christianity is spread into an ungodly world, it has had a good effect on society. Surely that would be indisputable. Wherever Christianity has gone, it's had a good effect. It's produced greater care for the sick. It's produced greater care for the poor. It has brought about greater protection for the underprivileged, for the defenseless. It's brought a greater respect for justice and for honesty. I mentioned a few of those cases last week. Abolition of social evils. You can go through country after country, and you'll find how countries where Christianity has penetrated have benefited in all these different areas that I've just mentioned. Now, there are some countries, of course, where over generations and even centuries, Christianity has become the dominating influence. And no doubt this has been a tremendous benefit to those countries. But, as we mentioned last week, it has also created very careless social attitudes among Christians. People, Christians, become so used to regarding their country as Christian that they can unthinkingly approve of whatever their country does. Now, isn't that what you get among many Christians? They just unthinkingly give their approval, particularly if it happens to be a political party that they rather like, and they will never challenge anything, they'll never disagree with anything, they'll defend it to the last, as if everything that particular party does is Christian. And so Christians become very apathetic. They become morally lazy, you might say. They don't exercise their judgment on these issues. They just give that blind approval to whatever is done in the name of their country. Even in international dealings, nationalism comes before righteousness and honesty at times. If it's for my country, well then it must be right. And so that sort of thinking can come through. Christians have to be very wary. Christians are not to be hooked on any of these ideologies or fads of the moment, nationalism and blind adherence to political parties and the like. Christians are to be thinking people who are to bring their perception. They're not just to sit back and think ours is a godly country because people go to church, and XYZ countries over there are all ungodly because they're communist or they're something else and God's judgment's going to be upon them, but he's going to bless us. Look, that is a totally wrong view. It shows that people simply haven't read the Bible if that's what they think. If Christians think that, then they haven't read much of the Bible. Time and again it says in the Bible that those countries to whom God gave greater blessing through sending his message to them, those countries are going to have a greater judgment, not a lesser judgment. They're going to have a greater judgment than the others. The Israelites of ancient times were shocked when one of the prophets said to them, "You only have I chosen among all the nations of the world, therefore I'm going to punish you." Now they thought the opposite. They thought that because they were God's chosen people, God was going to bless their nation above all others, and all the other nations were down the chute. The prophet had to reverse that and say it's the other way around. You see, Christians are not to be blind. Christians must be thinking people who are analysing issues the whole way. Now Christians, such as people here in our society, we live in a society which gives us a comfortable standard of living. If Christians are in that sort of society where there is security and comfort and progress and a general degree of justice and freedom that is not enjoyed in other countries, Christians have to be very wary of the dangers of such a society. It's very sadly possible for Christians to have high principles of personal behaviour, yet at the same time support a system which ignores those same principles. Dreadfully easy to do this. Many Christians have high principles for their personal behaviour, yet they can sometimes give their tacit approval to actions of a government which really are quite contrary to those very same principles. A simple illustration. We may respond to a telethon or something of that nature and give very generous aid to needy people in poor countries, and yet at the same time support a trade policy of our own country which ensures that our own country gets richer while all those other countries get poorer. You see what I mean? Having a personal ethic, a personal standard of behaviour which is admirable and commendable, and yet at the same time supporting a system which is acting on quite opposite principles. How many times has it happened that Christians give their approval to something which is done in business or even in government, which they would condemn if it were done by an individual? It's amazing, isn't it? It's impersonal, it's done in business, or it's done in the name of the government. And yet, in principle, if that very same thing was done by an individual to another, they'd be up in arms over it. Now, that's the sort of thing that I'm talking about here. So the Christian has to be aware of the issues around him. There are two extremes that the Christian must avoid. One is to be concerned only with personal godliness and to ignore the evil that infects the system. The other, of course, to be concerned only with social reform and so neglect personal responsibilities. It's very easy for people to denounce racism, for example, denounce racism in some distant nation, and yet at the very same time despise somebody that they consider socially inferior, lives in the same street, and yet despise that person, don't want to have anything to do with him, cut him off from ordinary discourse and friendship because he's socially inferior, a bit of a disgrace to the neighbourhood, that sort of thing. You see, we can be very loud in our condemnation of something that happens in a far country, and yet in the very same street we can be guilty in principle of the same sort of discrimination. It's very easy to condemn governments for a lack of social concern, and yet the individual Christian himself have no social concern. There may be lonely old people in the same neighbourhood. There may be poor people, unemployed, people who are socially in need one way or the other, disadvantaged people, underprivileged people, all sorts of needy people. And Christians do nothing whatever, never stir themselves to help. open the mouth wide and condemn the government for doing nothing, and yet don't stir themselves. Have you ever noticed that many people were condemned by Jesus, not because of the wrong that they did, but because of the good that they failed to do? And usually, if you look at the stories, it was usually the good that they had failed to do to those who were sick, who were poor, or who were outcast. Let us be thankful that the government does have welfare programs. Let us also be wary that we don't sit back and think because the government is doing it, we don't have to do anything. I finished last week on the note that Christian love is always going to be costly. True love, if it's exercised, is sacrificial. It's costly. And we can't escape our duties simply by thinking the government's going to look after it. We still have that responsibility to work towards healing, towards reconciliation. Blessed are the peacemakers, those who bring people together, people who are at variance, bringing them together, helping those who are in need. Just a few words here about our respect, the Christian's respect for human dignity. One of the great difficulties that we all face in any society, and it's been right through history the same, and it's the same today, one of the difficulties is that those who are in a position to bring about change in a society are the least likely to want change. Because the people who are in positions of power and influence, they are the people who benefit most from the existing order. Now, isn't that true? It's true in country after country. And if you've lived in a third world country where these differences are much more obvious, then it certainly makes you very angry at times. But even in our own country, the same thing happens. People who have the power and the influence, who should be bringing about change for the benefit of others, they're the least likely to bring it about because they're the ones who benefit most from the existing system. So why change it? You find as you look at the life of Jesus that he refused to use violence in any form, either to protect what was good or overthrow what is evil. And I think this has to be restated. He refused to use violence, whether to protect what was good or to overthrow what was bad. However, he also refused to be silent when he saw exploitation of disadvantaged people by those of power and influence. And as a result, the people who opposed Jesus most bitterly were the well-to-do people, the religiously respectable people. You see, it suited them far better for the social order to remain unchanged. The opposition to Jesus came from the people that today you'd find in our good mainline conservative churches, the respectable middle class, the upper middle class people. They were the ones who most opposed Jesus. They didn't want to change the social order because it suited them much better the way it was. We find that Jesus was not silent in denouncing these people. But he also showed that social reform was not the main issue. The root of the problem was human sin. Man's oppression of his fellow man is one of the evils that's resulted from the entrance of sin into the human race. It's a denial of the human dignity which all individuals possess equally, because all individuals are made equally in the image of God. And when you get this oppression of other people, then of course you have a denial of that basic human dignity which God gave to all men because he made all people equally in his image. Now, to treat people as unequal on the basis of race, or on the basis of social status, or on the basis of sex, is contrary to all that Jesus taught and all that he practiced. Jesus wants those who follow him to do all they can to remove the division and the hostility which man has brought into the world through his own selfishness and inhumanity. Remember again, I just quoted it a moment ago from the Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the peacemakers. They will be called the children of God." We have to work towards reconciliation. The basic reconciliation, of course, is the reconciliation which Jesus Christ brought of man to his Maker, but also of man to man. And now I'm going to go on and speak about this reconciliation. Working towards the healing of people's bodies, working towards the healings of rifts, working towards the healing of nature. Let us now look at this wider world, the renewing of the earth. Man not only exploits his fellow man, but he also exploits the natural world. The natural world belongs to God, and God placed it under man's care. You go back to Genesis chapter 1, and it says that God gave man dominion over the earth. Man is God's representative, you might say, in looking after the earth which God created. God placed the earth under man's care. He gave man permission to use it, to enjoy it, to develop it. And in this way, mankind would benefit and nature would develop its full splendor. That was part of God's purpose, that as mankind used his authority correctly, he would benefit and nature would move towards the full splendor which God intended for it. Now what happened, of course, was that man sinned. And as a result, not only was he affected, but nature also was affected. Now in some ways, man has made nature more beautiful. You can look at the gardens and the parks and all the beautiful things that man has done. And then, of course, you can see some of the ugly things he has done. We saw some on the TV the other night of the slash and burn methods which are used in so many countries. Good fertile land in a matter of years can be turned into desert. Did you see that on Africa, the Sahara Desert, how much it's increased in the last 20 or 30 years? Man has misused his power over nature. He's been unthinking, and so he's turned fertile country into deserts. You can look at the way people in their own country might rip the country apart, might scar it and leave it damaged. There's nothing wrong with exploiting the earth, benefiting from its resources. But when men exploit the earth without any thought for its future, when they use the resources of the earth simply to enrich themselves at the expense of others, then of course they're motivated by selfishness. There's a difference between using a thing lawfully and using it selfishly. And man has too often used the earth and its resources selfishly, ripped it apart, simply to enrich himself, normally at the expense of somebody else. Now, of course, man has used the resources of the earth to bring great prosperity to mankind. We all benefit. Many skills have resulted. That so often he has selfishly enriched only a few and then left lands devastated for countless thousands of future generations. You see the sort of thing I'm talking about. Christians recognize that man is merely God's representative. Yes, he is representative, he does have authority, but he is no more than a representative. He is not the absolute Lord. He is simply a representative of God in administering the world which God entrusted to him. Man is answerable to God for the way he treats nature. He's answerable to God for the way he shares its resources. Man does not have unlimited right to devastate the earth solely for financial profit, nor does he have unlimited right to destroy life simply for his own pleasure. I believe that Christians ought to encourage a lifestyle which cooperates with God's work in nature by using the earth's limited resources with sympathetic care and without unnecessary waste. Just looking now to the climax. God's plan is that at Christ's return a new era will dawn and all sin's evil consequences will be removed. God's people will at last be free from all the effects of sin, and the physical creation, which was denied its full splendor because of man's sin, it too will be perfected. As we read earlier in Romans chapter 8, it will be set free from its slavery to decay and it will share the glorious freedom of the children of God. Now, if God's purpose is to bring the natural world to its full splendor, then Christians ought to be working towards the healing of nature now. So to summarize the whole of our consideration today, God's goal should be the Christian's goal. Firstly, new people, new individuals, reconciled to God. Then a new community working towards that healing of people's bodies, the healings of their minds, the benefit of their physical well-being, the preparation for this new community, new people, a new community, and finally a new earth. And I believe that if they are the goals towards which God is moving in his development of human history, then they are the goals towards which the Christian ought to be working right now, so that that healing is beginning its work. And it's going to reach its climax, it's reached its full splendor in that glorious day when Jesus Christ will return and the kingdom of this world will become the kingdom of the Lord and his Christ.